It's Marketplace Tech for Monday the 18th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Multiple measurements of daily internet traffic in the U.S. show Netflix to be far and away the most watched video streaming service. Some credit the fact that the company was early. Others credit strong original programming like Orange is the New Black. But as Netflix prepares a quarterly earnings report today, equity analyst for S&P Market Intelligence Tuna Amobi says the ground is beginning to shift.
So companies like Amazon, Hulu, and a host of others have actually ratcheted up the competition.
This means that some of the numbers analysts will be looking at in Netflix's earnings report today will be the money the company is spending on more original content. While we are talking about original content today, the Republican National Convention kicks off. Can you believe it's only been 4 years since this comedy bit?
I'm not going to shut up. It's my turn.
That was Clint Eastwood talking to an empty chair representing President Obama during the RNC in 2012. The next day, a parody Twitter account for that empty chair had tens of thousands of followers. The original skit was being played on a loop on television and the internet. Well, this year, there's been a big uptick in live streaming the conventions online. Twitter will partner with CBS to live stream both this week's GOP event in Cleveland, Ohio, and next week's DNC in Philadelphia. It could mean faster generation of memes and also a new, younger audience for the political goings-on. Marketplace senior tech correspondent Molly Wood is here to talk more about this. Molly, what sort of audience will this find online, do we think?
You know, historically, the best performing parts of the conventions have been the closing speeches, sort of the last night of the convention where they pull out all the big wigs.
The main events.
That gets all the viewers. It is kind of an experiment to see whether people are really going to be interested in some of those smaller name speakers. But, you know, it only takes one or two people watching the live stream and then tweeting about it to turn any one of them into a viral hit. So it may not be about the sheer numbers, but the news-making potential.
We definitely seem to be in a moment when live video has been really important in capturing events all over the country, all over the world. Why do you think live is so powerful right now?
Yeah, you know, there is nothing like the sort of immediacy and intimacy of live, and it lends itself to really powerful shared experiences where people feel like they are in the moment as it's happening, and that's something that it's new. It has the potential to bring this political debate to a much wider audience.
I just want to, you know, the big confetti drop in 360 virtual reality. That's what I'm looking for, I feel like.
I want a virtual reality, too. I want to be able to virtually stand on the stage and pretend that I'm the VP pick.
Molly Wood is senior tech correspondent with Marketplace. Molly, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Ben.
We have been talking about Twitter and live video streaming today. Both of those things have come up in conversations about the Black Lives Matter movement, law enforcement, and violence. Technologist Anil Dash recently tweeted, quote, "You know how Silicon Valley advocates an Uber-esque model where everyone is an entrepreneur disrupting markets while the law lags behind? Realize that Eric Garner and Alton Sterling were brutally killed for being black while selling cigarettes and CDs. Cheap consumer products," end quote. Well, we asked Anil to come in and talk more about this idea. Anil, thanks for coming by. What are the similarities between disruption at tech companies and disruption in the underground economy?
Well, they're essentially about giving somebody who has an idea and wants to make a living for themselves the power to pursue that ambition. But the idea that if I want to go and hang out my shingle and sell CDs, it couldn't be more American. I mean, it is the myth that we are all told is that you can come here with your family and set up shop and make a living for yourself.
But we basically think about selling Lucy cigarettes as being definitely illegal, right? While the legality of what Uber and Lyft do is still being worked out.
Yeah. Well, it's not murky. I mean, you know, to do the majority of listings on Airbnb's site here in New York City are not legal as described by the law of how you're able to rent out space in New York. Now, is the law kind of anachronistic and out of date? Sure. that doesn't mean you get to just come in and be like, well, I don't like this law, so I'm going to break it. That is not an excuse that the guy selling Lucy's on the corner can use.
Do you think African-Americans are left out of the sharing economy?
Yeah, 100%. Right. So the companies we think of as being part of the sharing economy, one, you look at the companies who their founders are and who their investors are and who has substantial equity and ownership in them. And you'll be hard-pressed to find any black people in the C-suite, period. So that's step one. Step two is they do hire some workers who are black, but the workers are specifically not employees and are denied the benefits and expectations that a worker would have. They're not jobs. They're just workers. That inequity, combined with the fact that there are now a lot of repeating of predatory patterns. I see this now where Uber did a high-profile PR event with Al Sharpton at Sylvia's in Harlem to talk about how their drivers essentially will pick up black folks and regular cabs won't, which to some degree is true. And then they just launched a promotion for sort of all you can ride with Uber, and you have to start and end your ride south 125th Street in Manhattan, explicitly excluding Harlem.
That is fascinating.
So whose money do they want? Who do they want to be their customers? Which neighborhoods do they want to serve? And when do they address those neighborhoods for what needs? Is it for PR or is it for what they're actually trying to serve a product with?
You say that one of the solutions here is black ownership. And maybe that starts with how we talk about the man or the woman who sells CDs and Lucy cigarettes on the street.
That's right. And what you realize is, well, if I said a decentralized model that isn't about a big giant company like Uber getting tons and, you know, tens of billions of dollars in funding, and it would have much more diverse ownership, and it would be much more neighborhood-based, what it looks like is the folks who are driving cars in the city already. That's the kind of thing that can be solved without it being through one or two companies that have ownership that is very exclusionary about who profits.
Technologist and writer Anil Dash, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.